Now back to the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap on 95.7 The Game.
We're back on the wrap. Got a new member of the San Francisco Giants, Jackson Flora, the pride of UCSB, coming to the Giants, graduate of Foothill High, lived in Pleasanton, from Walnut Creek at one point. I wonder what part of Walnut Creek he was from, the good side or the Northgate side. Looking at the scouting report on Jackson Flora, high 90s fastball that can touch 100. That'll play. That is his highest graded pitch. Dan, the MLB scouting grades have it as a 70. For those who don't know, MLB scouting grades make no sense. It's done on a scale of 20 to 80. If you're a 50, that's considered an average. 60 is above average. 70 is well above average. If you are a 65 plus grade, you grade out as someone who could be a future all-star in Major League Baseball. So it seems like a very arbitrary system. 70 graded fastball, a 55 slider, a 55 changeup, 60 overall. So solid numbers there, but the fastball is his best looking weapon right now. And the Giants just took him with the fourth pick overall in the draft.
Maybe he can be the next Shane Bieber, who happens to be out of the UC Santa Barbara Gaucho system.
Not a lot of guys
that came out of Santa Barbara when it comes to baseball, but I know Shane Bieber is one of them.
So at one point in this past season, from March 6th to April 10th, Jackson Flora had a 38 and a third inning scoreless streak, which was the longest verified streak in program history. We're seeing all these fun little facts come out about Jackson Flora now. So hopefully the Giants have a bit of a winner here in Jackson Flora, because again, pitching is lacking with this team right now.
Their future rotation is going to be when they get to the postseason, whenever that day is going to be. You pare down the rotation, it'll be Logan Webb.
So you're keeping Logan Webb in this scenario?
Jackson Flora. Well, let's say 2 years from now. Let's say it's
I'm not trading Logan Webb.
We're in a postseason game. Here come the San Francisco Giants. What are they going to be the pitching matchups as they take on whomever, the St. Louis Cardinals, in the first round of the postseason? Logan Webb.
Flora could be in there.
Jackson Flora.
Wizenhunt.
Tugboat.
Is it Tugboat? Tugboat Wilkinson.
Tugboat Wilkinson. There you go.
Maybe we'll see him in there. Hopefully it'll be Flora.
There it is. I'm good.
Hopefully Wizenhunt can elevate to that point. I love what I saw from Wizenhunt the other night. Landon Roop, maybe he's your 4-5 starter. I know everyone's pissed off at Landon Roop. I like to think he can still be a solid pitcher for this team, but that's your opinion if you're of that ilk. So,
yeah, the only thing with Wizenhunt was Colorado. I mean, I know. Can the team hit or not?
You know what? It's the only thing about Wizenhunt is he's on the Giants. I don't know if the Giants – I don't know if we're in a situation where you could say, well, it's the Rockies. I mean, that is still a solid lineup. Now, it was the Rockies at work. No, I'm not going to do that. He had a good start the other night, Dan.
All right.
For Wizenhunt. He's going to get lit up in his next start, maybe. Hopefully not.
He's a left-hander.
I don't mean to put that evil out there, Carson. Thanks for tuning in.
You guys know who else went to UCSB? Barry Zito.
Oh, I thought he was USC guy.
Or it says Barry Zito played in the program. I don't know how long. But
I thought he was an SC guy.
Michael Young, former Ranger. Ryan Spielborgs, who Giants fans dislike.
Shane Bieber, right?
Shane Bieber, the recent one, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Before we get to Ron Washington, I want to get to our guy Skills, S-K-I-L-L-S, in Vallejo. Skills, what's going on, buddy? You're on the wrap.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. The first thing I wanted to touch on real quick, as far as the Rockies' competition with the Giants, you can't when you're as bad as the Giants have been this season and the Rockies have regularly beaten you soundly at times, you can't ever dismiss their level of competition. Not when you have the record the Giants have. Just want to say that. Dylan Smith, Sam, you want to give him flowers? I want to give this guy cars. I want to give him sports cars and Porsches and Corvettes and all that, because getting out of that bases loaded, no out jam last night, that's probably his best performance of the year. It put us in a position where we could have won the game. Unfortunately, things happened later on, as we know, with Killian. And, it's one of those things where the Giants posed the situation for so long, probably since Brian Wilson. This has been 16 years now where they've probably had 12 or 13 different closers lead the team in saves. And until they get that situation settled, they're never going to make much progress. And I'm being honest. 2027, I can't deal with this in 2027 if there's even as a season in 2027. If the Giants don't have a closer and they're losing games like this next year, I don't know how long I'm going to be able to watch. I really just don't know. This has been just throwing away games late. It hurts. It's painful to have to deal with. And
it's demoralizing for sure.
I know you got Washington. I know you got Washington coming up, so I'll just finish up with this. Is Kyle Karros, Eric Karros' kid, you know, automatically there's built-in hate since he's the kid of a Dodger.
Yep.
But now this is the second game he's beaten us that I can think of offhand. Second game he's beaten us this week. Beat us last Sunday, too, or last Saturday, with the home run off of, ironically, Smith. But and then last night's single. So, I mean, Kyle, you know, go do your thing. I don't ever want to see you again. Thank you guys for the call.
All right, thank you for that call there, Skills. And, yeah, playing the infield in there, up the middle, didn't really like that in that Kyle Karros base hit that put the Rockies ahead. So, anyway, as I promised, we got Ron Washington here. Very excited to share this interview. We had a great conversation with Wash yesterday. So, without further ado, courtesy of the River Islands guest line, my conversation with Ron Washington.
Sam Lumman here alongside Coach Ron Washington. Coach, thanks so much for taking the time to sit with me and talk a little ball today. You're back in the Bay Area this year. Obviously, you're in Oakland for a while. How's it been being back in the Bay Area this season?
It's been fantastic. It really has. I forgot about how good this weather is.
Yeah, so when you got back here, is there like a place you like to go or like to eat that you have to go to when you do come back here?
No, not really, because I haven't really ventured out much in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's usually the regular thing. I'll find a P.F. Chang or something like that. Or I'll take a ride to Oakland and get something to eat over there. But for the most part, I've just been hanging around here in San Francisco. I've been going to the Townsend Inn. Yeah. Great food.
Okay, all right. How often you get back over to Oakland?
Maybe once every homestand.
Okay, nice.
I'll get up in the morning and take a ride over.
Yeah. Remember the old times there?
Just a ride over. Yeah. You know, the ride is soothing.
Yeah. So you spent so many years coaching in the Coliseum. Like, now, obviously, baseball's not there anymore. Just, what do you remember about coaching at the Coliseum? What are some of your favorite memories in that ballpark?
The teams that we had. Mm-hmm. Every year we came in without an opportunity to do anything, and we always did something. And that's simply because of the leaders that we had on that team. And Jason Giambi and Eric Chavez and Scott Hatterberg and Miguel Tejada, Mark Ellis, those guys. Mm-hmm. Even Mark Gatze.
Yeah.
He was our center fielder. So
yeah.
I remember those guys every single day. They showed up. They had one thing on their mind, being the best they could be for their teammates.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're one of the most respected coaches in the game. You're a baseball lifer. Any team would be lucky to have you on their coaching staff. Mm-hmm. What compels you want to come back to San Francisco and coach here this year?
Well, I had a bypass operation last year, quadruple bypass, and the Giants and the Cincinnati Reds are the two teams that reached out to me, and Cincinnati decided to go with someone within the organization, and then the Giants called, and I mean, when the San Francisco Giants called, how can you turn back?
Yeah.
I mean, the history that goes with this organization.
And then, so you got done playing, I want to say it was 89, I believe was your last
90.
Year? 1990. And you went to, became a coach with the Mets. Did it take long for you to realize that you wanted to get into coaching after you got done playing?
No. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't something that was on my mind while I was playing, but I definitely got calls from other organizations that said, when you decide to retire, give me a call.
Oh, really?
And Bob Floyd was the field director for the New York Mets, and I've known Bob Floyd for a while. And so when I retired from playing, I gave him a call, and he took me on without an interview, just took me on by reputation. And I went to the Mets, and I was there 5 years before I went to Oakland.
Yeah, so you go to the A's. How'd you end up coming on to Art House staff?
Well, they had an opening. Dave Stewart and Billy Bean was the assistant general manager, Sandy Alderson, and they needed an infield guy, and they recommended me. And I met Art in Houston in the airport, did an interview, and 3-4 days later, they called me and hired me.
So you were portrayed in the movie Moneyball. Do you feel like they portrayed you accurately in that movie?
Yeah, I was portrayed accurately, except for the fact that I wasn't one of those guys that coached from the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who portrayed me, he was doing a lot of the coaching from the sideline.
Yeah.
I'm a hands-on type of guy. That was the only difference. Other than that, it was good.
Yeah. So line from the movie, when your character told Scott it's incredibly hard to play first base, was that a real line or was that a movie line?
No, that was a movie line.
That's what I figured.
But the line was used.
Yeah.
But it was used with a couple of choice words in the manager's office in Phoenix Municipal Stadium.
Hmm.
I didn't actually go to Scott Berg's house. We did have that conversation,
yeah.
But it was in the ballpark at Phoenix Municipal Stadium. And like you said, I told him it was going to be hard to do, but with a few choice words in there. And the incredible difficulty line was movie line.
So you've been coaching for a long time. How would you say you've evolved as a coach over the years?
Well, I think I've gone through three or four generations. I make an adjustment, just like you want players to make an adjustment and then readjust and adjust and readjust. I've done all of that. And that's the one thing that you have to do to remain valid in this game, relevant. And to make a difference in this game, you got to make some adjustments. And I never squawked at the adjustments. I just made the adjustment like I would make if I was a player at the plate, or make it if I was a player playing defense, or make it if I was a player running the bases.
There's been so much technology that's been added into the game over the years as you've been coaching. How has that adjustment been, incorporating all this new data, all this new technology, and while also utilizing the skills, knowledge, and know-how that you've accumulated over your baseball
life? Well, the adjustment I made in that situation is I tell the guys that are experts at the technology, if you want me to understand the technology, then you got to understand what I do for a living, too. You just don't come to me and try to throw it down my throat. Explain why I need to use this, and then I can explain to you what I get out of it and how we can apply it to the players, because it doesn't matter what they give me if I can't give it down to the players. It's useless. So me personally, that's the way I've handled it. I've never backed off anything. All I want you to do is explain to me what you do, and I want you to listen to what I do. And if we can get along doing that, we're not going to have a problem communicating.
No, it sounds very simple that way.
It is.
So you've been a manager, too, as well as a coach. How much does your time as a manager kind of influence how you go about as a coach? Like, you've seen both sides of that.
The thing is, your coaching influences your managing. Your managing don't influence your coaching. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because when you're coaching, you're involved in a lot. And when you're managing, most of the stuff you're involved in coaching, you see it firsthand out there happening. So, yes, you know, you have to teach your coaching staff just like you help teach your players. But mainly coaching is just making certain that the need is met. Managing is making sure that the need of everyone is met. That's front office. That's general manager. That's players, that's coaches, that's media, that's medical staff. As a manager, you got all of that on your plate.
There's so much more you have to juggle in that situation. Well, I guess on that sense, what do you enjoy more, managing or coaching?
I enjoy coaching. Let me go back. I enjoy managing for the years that I was old, had the opportunity to manage. But I understand I make a bigger difference as a coach. That's all.
No, obviously, I see you working with these guys in the field, doing all these infield drills before games, and it's incredibly mesmerizing to watch you work with these players. All these drills that you have them go through, just how did you come across some of these drills that you have them do?
Well, first of all, it's a mimic of the coach I had with the Los Angeles Dodgers named Chico Fernandez. He always did a lot of close-up stuff with me as a youngster on the field. And so when I became a coach, I took some of the stuff he did on the field, and I took it to another level like you see me do on the side. I just took that to another level. He would roll the ball, and we would exchange the ball with second baseman, shortstop. And I just took it to a point where when he rolling the ball to me, we were working the last hop. So I developed this drill to work on the last hop, because that is the last thing you do when a ball is put in play. Now, and then from there, I just started developing the angles. Because you have angles to get to those balls. And you got to go to the balls correctly. And my little drills on the side here, it helped identify if you are going to the ball in a correct manner. And it just kept evolving and evolving. What I'm doing right now, I started in 1990, and I've been doing the same thing since 1990.
Ron Washington here joining us on the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap. You've worked with a lot of great players over the years. Who are some of the players you would say that when they came to you, they just seemed, for lack of a better word, maybe lost as fielders, and then when you were able to work with them, turn them into great defensive players? Who are some of the names that kind of stick out to you in terms of, like, I guess your greatest works, I guess, is one way to put it?
Well, my greatest work was with Marcus Simeon.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Beane called me after I lost my job in Texas,
mm-hmm.
and told me he got this kid who need my help. And he said, he not only needs your help, you need him, because I was at home.
Mm-hmm.
So I came in, it was Marcus Simeon.
All right.
And when I arrived on the scene, believe it or not, everyone that I ran into told me that you can't make him into a shortstop. He's this, he's that. Well, my line was, Billy Beane called me, which Billy Beane and I are friends.
Mm-hmm.
He called me and he said, I want Marcus Simeon to be turned into a shortstop. Marcus Simeon wanted to be a shortstop.
Yeah.
Bob Melvin was the manager. He was okay with me coming in and helping Marcus become a shortstop. Dave Force at the time was the general manager because Billy was the president, and he wanted him to become a shortstop. So there was four of us that was on board to try to help Marcus become a shortstop. So all the noise outside of us four, neither one of us heard. Dave Force had the patient to wait. Bob Melvin had the patient to wait. Billy Beane had the patient to wait. I had the patient to wait, and through all that waiting, Marcus got all he needed to become a shortstop, and then he goes to Toronto and win a Gold Glove as a second baseman.
How proud, of course, as a second baseman, not a shortstop. Just how proud are you when you see these guys do get these Gold Gloves that you help them win? That's got to be so amazing for you as a coach to see that happen.
Well, that's what we do as coaches, you know. Our job is to try to help them get to the level that they want to get to. And the only thing I've ever told them is, you're going to have to give me work, and you're going to have to give me maintenance. And if they give me work and they give me maintenance, they can meet the dream and the goal that they have set for themselves. We can do it together. So I don't ever just take credit for what you see a kid does that has been working with me, because you could be the best coach in the world. If the kid you're working with can't go get it done, how good are you?
Yeah.
But if the kid go get it done, give him credit.
Yeah.
Because when we started this, I knew I was a badass.
That's got to be cool. You've done some incredible work with Luis Arraez this year. Obviously, he had a reputation of his defense before he came here. He looks incredible out there. What's it been like working with him this year?
It's been just as satisfying as any other player that I worked with. Luis came in the spring training. He had some goals set.
Mm-hmm.
And I just point blank told him, I can help you reach those goals, but you got to give me what I need for you to reach those goals. And if at any time you decide that you can't do this, I'm through. I'm just going to give up. Well, from the day he arrived in spring training down in Scottsdale, the results out there is what Louis already had inside of him.
Mm-hmm.
The San Francisco Giants and the work and the maintenance that he's done with me,
mm-hmm.
is the vision you see out there. Give the credit to Louis, and give the credit to the San Francisco Giants, because as I said earlier, Ron Washington knows what he's doing.
And it's translating out there for sure. And of course, another guy that you've got to work with a lot this year is Bryce. Just saw you working with him up there, and he was just saying, you know, in 2024, he didn't have a position. And now you got him playing really good first base work there. Just talk about what it's been like working with him and just how he's kind of shown up and taken what you've taught him this year.
Well, the thing with Bryce, I've been surprised, because when I was working with him in spring training, I didn't actually know he was 21 years old.
He looks a little bit older, doesn't he?
Yeah, he looks about 24, 25.
Tall enough to be older, yeah.
Tall enough to be older. So I didn't know, but as we got to the end of spring, someone told me he was 21.
You didn't know until the end of the spring that he was 21?
Yeah, I learned at the end of spring that he was 21 years old. But what I did learn about him is he has work ethic. Mm. He show up every day, he wants it, he works. Because he's 21 years old, you got to stay on him,
mm-hmm.
because he does blank out every now and then and think that he got it. You think he has it.
Yeah.
And I keep telling him, when you get to the point where you think you got it, you go home. Because as long as you're in baseball, you got to work. And so far, he's been putting in the time, he's been putting in the work. He's 21 years old, and look how he's handling himself. He's 21. How much baseball does he have under his belt,
mm-hmm.
at 21? How much wisdom and knowledge has he acquired at 21? But he's up in the big leagues handling himself. Class act.
Yeah.
I like Bryce.
and I hope the Giants keep me around so I can help him and watch him grow into one of the best players that we'll ever have in the National League.
So we've talked about, obviously, you've worked with Marcus, who's a shortstop and a second baseman, Luis at second, Bryce at first. Sure, you did a lot of work with Matt Chapman as well when he was first coming up. When you're working with guys who play different positions, do you have to kind of coach them a little bit differently when they play different positions, or is it all kind of what you do translate across those positions?
Well, it's both. It's what you do translate across those positions, but there's different nuances at every position, and I know every position. So most of the things are the same. The education of the different positions is what's different. Mm-hmm. I talk about shortstop, and I got shortstops a little different than I'll talk about second base. I talk about first base different than I talk about second.
Yeah.
I talk about third different because they are different.
Yeah.
But the things we do to make sure that you equip to handle them are the same.
So, Ron, again, thank you so much for your time. You've been in this game your entire life. This might be a very broad question, but what do you think is the most important lesson the game of baseball has taught you about life?
Patience. You got to have patience. You know, when I was a young coach, I'm like a lot of the young coaches in the game today. I want everything right now. It's got to happen today. But now I realize process. And in the process, you get patience. And once you learn patience in this game of baseball, you're going to be pretty good in this game.
Awesome. Coach, thank you so much for chatting with me today. Really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you bringing me on. Thank you so much.
That was Ron Washington, my conversation with him in the Giants dugout last night before their 4-3 loss to the Rockies. On the other side, we're going to wrap this show up. We're going to talk about Jackson Flora a little bit more, newest San Francisco Giant. Plus, I have it, the definitive 5 worst losses of the season so far. That and more on the Weekend Wrap, brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good.
Now back to the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap on 95.7 The Game.
Final stretch here of the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap as I get tangled up in my cord here. Sam Lohman alongside Dan Devone. Giants just drafted Jackson Flora with the number one overall pick. On the previous segment, you heard my conversation with Ron Washington. We'll post that up on YouTube as well if you want to go back and re-listen to it. You can also go back and re-listen to it on the free Odyssey app. And yeah, Wash, man. What a great conversation.
Yeah, good job on that.
Yeah.
He's an interesting guy.
I think my favorite part of that conversation was asking about the Moneyball scene, or obviously in the scene in the movie where he's sitting in the living room with Brad Pitt's Billy Bean and Chris Pratt's Scott Hatterberg, and Billy Bean's like, yeah, first base is incredibly easy. Scott, tell him, Wash, it's incredibly hard. And so getting the actual story on how that went down, that was pretty fun there.
Well,
but
the conversation apparently did take place, just not at his house.
Just not in his house. And I've heard there were some choice words that were thrown in there too. It's like, oh, love to know what those choice words were. I didn't ask that question because, again, that was supposed to be a safe for radio interview, and I didn't want to risk the chance that some of those choice words were words that would need to be bleeped out later on. So, but Washington was cool. That was what those guys like, Dan, like, I kind of regret, like, I never really got like a one-on-one with Justin Verlander last year. And Verlander, of course, announced his official retirement earlier this week. So congratulations, Justin, on a successful career for him. But I regretted never getting a one-on-one with him. And I couldn't let that happen with Ron Washington. I don't know if this is going to be Wash's only year with the Giants, but I'm glad I was able to check that off my bucket list. It was like, we got to get Wash on this station some way, somehow.
So how long does he work out with these guys before a game?
So I get there. So the clubhouse usually opens about 3.5 hours before the game. That's usually when I get there. About 2.5 hours before the game, he'll be out there.
Wait, why are you getting there so early?
Well, that's when the clubhouse opens and the media can go in and talk to players. So yesterday,
but why are you talking? So you like to do the pregame?
Yeah. Well, I do the whole pregame festivities. Yeah.
All right.
So, like, last night was a 7:15 first pitch. Clubhouse opened at like 3:10, I want to say, so about 4 hours prior. And
so last night, what time did you get to the ballpark?
I got there around 3:10 yesterday.
And what time did you go home?
Oh my God, dude. The fireworks did not help.
Oh,
it was a nightmare and a half getting out of the city. Well, the game went late, first off, because that hour-long ninth inning.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to.
And then, so I think I got out of the ballpark close to like 11:30, got in my car, and I got home by 12:30. And of course, you know, brush teeth, get ready for bed. I think I was in bed by 1 o'clock.
No doing the hair last night, because that would have been another hour and a half.
No, that's why the hair is very meh today.
So that's a long day.
That's
brother.
After doing the morning show and waking up at 3:30 that morning, going off of 6-ish hours of sleep. Like, I think I get usually about maybe 25 to 30 hours of sleep a week.
Sleeping tomorrow, young fella.
So I'm actually right after the show, I'm hightailing out of town. I'm going up to Inverness for a week to my little secluded fortress of solitude up in Tomales Bay. And so much sleeping. I am counting down the minutes till I can just blast out of here. So yeah, I've been running on fumes. So yeah, thank you for that. But yeah, Wash, just absolutely awesome guy. He brought up the Marcus Semien story, and I like that he brought that up, because I remember my first tour of duty with this station, back when this station was the home of the A's. I was cranched to go to an A's game, and actually I had to go there because Lo Neal, who was doing the morning show at the time, he was going to take batting practice with the A's. And so I went there to kind of do social media videoing for it, basically do what, you know, our Whitley Sandretto does now. Shout out Whitley, our head of digital here at 95.7. So I was going to go in and take video of that. And while I'm waiting for Lo to get into the batter's box, start hitting, I'm watching Wash work with Marcus Semien. This is 2016. In 2015, I think Semien had like all of the errors. He was the worst to field at defensive shortstop in baseball. And I believe this was Wash's first year back with the A's after he was done with Texas. And I'm watching Wash work with Semien. He's using the pancake. I think Wash would work for about 15, maybe 20 minutes tops. And I texted my friends, Daniel, Jordan, Kevin. They're huge A's fans. They're three of my best friends. They're all huge A's fans. All of them were so out on Semien at the time. Like, he sucks. He's never going to be good. I texted him in that moment, guys, I'm watching Wash work with Semien. This dude's going to be a Gold Glover in 3 years. And 3 years later, he was a Gold Glover and MVP candidate.
You said that.
I said that. Yeah, I texted him that in that moment. And so it's cool that Wash brings him up as a
Well, what is it about him story. That he does that other coaches don't do?
I think he keeps it simple. But he gets on your ass about it too. He demands perfection. He'll call you out if you're not perfect, but he'll also be the first guy to praise you when you are. Mm. I was watching him work with Jonah Cox the other weekend, and Cox was just, he seemed so wide-eyed and excited to be working with Wash. And, you know, whenever Jonah did something really good, he was like, oh, great job, man. Give him a pat on the back, a hug, really lift him up. But then when he did something wrong, he pointed out right away. Nope, you got to do it like that. Let's do it again. And he's a stickler. And what I love about Wash is he says at the end, like, as long as you're willing to show up and put in the work, I'm going to work with you. But if you're not willing to show up, put in the work, okay, go do your thing. I know what I could do. It's on you.
Yeah.
And I love the confidence that he has as a head coach, as a baseball coach.
No, it's sort of fascinating, just to bring it back to Adamas and Devers, that they don't necessarily put in this sort of work.
Not every day. Again, I will admit I'm not there every night. Mm. I'm not there on the road. There's a lot that I do not see. But at the same time, like, I see Eldridge and Arias and Schmidt working with them every day. I think Chapman does a lot of his work before I usually get to the ballpark. Of course, he's been shut down from baseball activities right now for the time being. Probably could have mentioned that earlier in the show. That's actually kind of noteworthy. But Giants, actually, on that note, really quick aside on Matt Chapman. Yeah, being shut down from baseball activities. Tony was asked if he's going to do a rehab assignment. Still up in the air on that. But depending on how long he shut down there for. So that's the latest on Matt Chapman there. But I've seen Chapman putting in the work all the time at third base. Whereas, yeah, I just don't see as much from Willie and Rafi as often. When considering how often I see those guys putting in the work, I feel like I should be able to see those two. But I leave it open for the possibility that there are things that I do not see that are still happening beyond my purview.
Well, I think what's fascinating that you mentioned that beyond your purview and what you cannot see, oftentimes, just following sports, that when you see a team like that of the San Francisco Giants, and you look at their roster 1 through 9, which is pretty, I wouldn't call it imposing, but I would say it's much better than what the record indicates, and certainly a team that you would think would go to the playoffs. And then when they're as bad as they are, and nobody is really, it really hasn't been injuries or something that you can point a finger at, believe it or not. I mean, to think this is only going to get worse if some key players go down with significant injuries. But if you're void of any real injuries and you look at this team and you're like, wow, that's a pretty good starting lineup. well, why are they so bad? Why? It's why the are they so bad?
Yeah.
Well, you could say it's the bullpen, but more often than not, in my experience, it's the things you can't see, to your point. And it's sometimes it's just nothing more than an attitude and guys just not wanting to play with one another. Yeah. And that happens in sports from time to time. And so I, as we sit here and scratch our head as to, okay, you can be bad, maybe 500 bad, which I think a lot of us would consider a disappointment going into the season, but to be epically bad where you're on a pace to lose 100 games, what gives here? I wouldn't be surprised if a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, we read a memoir, we hear stories about this 2026 San Francisco Giant team that there was a lot of issues.
Mm-hmm.
Behind the scenes.
Well, that's why I think you brought up the Braves earlier in this show, and I thought that was a very interesting example you brought up. The 2024 Braves, similar situation. They got to an 0-7 start with a really, really good lineup and a really, really good pitching staff and really good coaching staff, too. The Braves are a very respectable organization. Mm-hmm. And that season just went off the rails immediately. I think they finished somewhere around the 74-77 win range that season. And then they bounced back last year, had a good year last year, and they're having a great year this year with a lot of the same cast and characters that was on that 2024 team. And, oh, breaking news, Mike Yastrzemski on the 10-day injured list, speaking of the Braves. And so I think it's interesting to use them as an example, though, Dan, because I think it's very easy to look at this Giants team, and this is going to piss a lot of people off, Steven Ruderman, our friend, included among them. It's very easy to look at the cast on this team. You're like, you know what? Maybe this was just a bad year. Maybe things just got off to a bad start. Things spiraled out of control. These guys have track records. We believe in those track records. Let's try again next year. I can absolutely see that being the consensus with this team. And I don't know if that's the case. Chapman, again, he's 33. His skill set's only going to decline. How quickly, I don't know. But he is an injury risk. And that's something that's going to not go away. Willy Adames, he had a good year last year. I don't know about this year. Rafi Devers, he's technically in the prime, but my guess is there's more not great years ahead of him than great years. It could be better next year. But I don't know about the years beyond next year, and that's, of course, assuming we have a next year. Shout out to Lockout.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far, because I think that, getting back to my original statement, that I do think that there's something amiss about this team that we can't see. And so with that being said, I think the last thing I'd want to do is to bring all these guys back. And they know who it is. If there is indeed something going on, my best guess would be Devers. And I think that there might be some sort of division in the locker room. The minute you have guys who start, it's not unlike here at 95.7 The Game or any other workplace, that if you're to get the most out of people, they got to want to enjoy coming to work every day. And I think that there might be something behind the scenes with the Giants. I don't know this is fact, but more often than not, when you see a team like that of San Francisco that has a good roster and they're so underwhelming, that usually, more often than not, that there's something more than just the physical that's at work here. And I'd venture to say that there's a couple of culprits in there that are creating some division. And we may not know the full story, if ever, but
I'm sure towards the end of the year, the hit pieces will come out. Hey, Dan, I remember that 2023 Giants team, one of the most difficult Giants teams to watch in a very, very long time. I saw them playing their little card game all year long in that clubhouse. And I'll never forget, like, the amount of times I saw Jock Peterson take out his little notebook and write down someone's scores or whatever. And then at the end of the year, Andrew Bagley comes out with the infamous Pasoy story, which led to Daryl DeGuru Johnson screaming out, "We got a Pasoy problem in the clubhouse." And that was a massive issue because it was just, it encapsulated just a season that just kind of rotted from the inside out. And we all learned about that towards the end of the year, but we saw it in the clubhouse throughout most of the season. What I'm seeing this year, I no one's playing, like, there's card games being played. I don't think it's Pasoy. I don't think it's getting too out of hand in terms of how many people are playing it. I still see a lot of guys showing up every day, putting in the work. I see your guy, Cuckoo Gilbert, I see him in the cage a lot. I see Bryce out there with Wash a lot. Like, there are guys who are putting in the work to get better this season. I just right now, I don't know how deep it goes in terms of who's putting in the work, who's not putting in the work, who's a problem, who's not a problem. I have theories, but I'm not going to postulate theories on air right now when I don't have conclusive evidence. I'm not going to go that deep into my reckless speculation. But yeah, no, there's something is amiss. I don't think that's a controversial statement at all, though.
Well, I guess this really gets back to, can they move off of Rafael Devers? First of all, do you think they want to? And I would venture to say they do. And secondly, it just becomes a matter of... And
so are you putting Rafi kind of as like... I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Yes,
here, Dan,
because I am being reckless, unlike you.
Okay,
much more responsible. Yeah,
if I said, are you putting like if you were to power rank your Giants problems in the clubhouse, is Rafi at the top of your power rankings?
I base it on nothing.
Yeah.
I base it on just simply a guy who's talking into a microphone.
Okay,
I don't know. This is fact, yeah. But I do think that there is something wrong that is not visible to the average sort of person watching this team as to understanding why this is happening.
Yeah.
And more often than not, just my experience is that there's... I'll give you an analogy in basketball. In the Boston Celtics back in the day, when they had their two best players were Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward, and they both went down with injuries. And then that year, two rookies by the name of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown led them to the Eastern Conference Finals and went to a Game 7 against LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. So you were thinking the following year, when you get Kyrie Irving back and you get Jason Hayward back, to go along with these two rookies and Al Horford and all these players, they were the odds-on favorite to win the NBA Finals and to clearly beat the East. They were a sub-500 team. Everybody was healthy. And so you looked at it, and very similar to that of the San Francisco Giants, you're like, why are you so damn bad? And then it came out months later that this was the beginning of crazy Kyrie when he went to Brooklyn and he was
everything went flat.
And he was such a problem in that locker room, and he was so divisive to the younger players that was the reason. That was the culprit. And I always remember that, just to use that as an example when I'm sort of surmising what's wrong with other teams. And Major League Baseball, I don't think locker rooms are any different in Major League or the NFL or that of Major League Baseball, that there is really something there to that, that if you cultivate the right energy, it translates into wins and losses. Again, to bring it back to the 2010 Giants, it was the complete opposite, where it was a team physically, you're like, yeah, and granted, Lincecum and Kane and company would eventually be really good, but at that time, they were just like, how, Edgar Renteria, really? All of these guys are going to, you know, Cody Ross, this is going to win a World Series? But as Mike Kruko was so bold to say, because he recognized it as a veteran, obviously, that this team is going to win and go to the playoffs, because you could sense, it was palpable, that they had the proper alignment in that locker room.
I agree with that. That was also a very veteran-heavy team, that 2010 team. You had a lot of long-time guys. Like, your youth was behind the plate in Buster Posey and on the pitcher's mound. That is where your young guys were at. And if you want to focus on Devers for just a moment here, Dan, like, it doesn't help that when he got here, this team was, like, what, 14 games above 500 or something like that, and they've been, you know, this, gesturing wildly at the Giants ever since then. It's very easy to make that correlation of, Rafi made them bad. I don't think it's that simple.
I agree.
You know, and I asked Buster about that during his nightmare presser, and maybe it's an unfair question to have asked him, but everyone's wondering, though, is Rafi the problem? I know Giants fans are all saying, we'll start with Rafi. So I threw that question at Buster just because I know every Giants fan would want to ask that question of Buster. And Buster gave, you know, he didn't attribute it to Rafi. Of course, he's not going to say that. You know, he's not going to say, yeah, I'm pretty sure Rafi is the reason why. Of course, he's not. That would be malpractice if it was true or not. But I got to wonder, Dan, part of the reason why things went south with Rafi in Boston is he felt that he was getting usurped or replaced. You know, they brought in Alex Bregman to put him at third base, and they didn't tell him about that. And he took exception to that. He comes to the Giants. They tell him up front, hey, we want you to play first base. He's like, okay, you told me that up front, so I'm on board with that. Now, all of a sudden, here comes this 6'7 bearded guy in Bryce Eldridge, 21 years old, who plays the exact same positions as Rafi Devers. If you're Rafi, there's got to be a part of you, reckless speculation, that's kind of rolling your eyes going, poop. Here we go again. Like, that's another guy who's, they want to have usurp your position.
Mm-hmm.
I got to wonder how much that is on his mind this year.
Oh, for sure. We already saw this play out in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess to your point and what it is that you just mentioned there, it wasn't out of nowhere for Bryce Eldridge, though. He was already in the system, and he was always tagged as to be the next guy. Like, he was his generational prospect, right? That was just yo-yoing between the Giants, the parent club, and the minor league. So I guess it begs the question, why would you put Rafi or the Giants in this situation when you had Bryce Eldridge? I know there was a sort of, we'll just let it figure itself out, right?
Well, I will say, and this is where you brought up the overcorrection earlier in the show from the Farhan era. Farhan Zaidi, I recall, it seemed like he was so nervous to make a trade because he didn't want to block a prospect. Like, let's not go out and make a swing a deal for random name Luis Robert Jr., who was a name that Giants fans were banging on the table. Go get me this guy. Oh, we can't do that. Wade Mettler's coming up through the system. We don't want to block Wade Mettler. Like, that's the kind of stuff we saw in the Farhan Zaidi era. It was very easy to say, forget about the guy in the system. Get the guy now. Figure it out later.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here we are. We're forget the guy in the system. Figure it out later. The figuring out later part is not as easy as we thought it was.
Granted, because the guy
outfield
in the system
versus is, first base, yeah. Different positionings there, but...
And the guy in the system is not Wade Mettler.
Yeah, exactly. The guy in the system is a lot better than that. So I like the Rafi deal when it happened. I'm not going to sit here and play revisionist history and be like, oh, I thought it was coming all along. That's Steven Ruderman's job. But I think we all underestimated just how easy it would be to have those two harmoniously come together. Now, maybe it is going to work out. Maybe Bryce really is just meant to be a DH his entire career. Not betting on that right now. Maybe Rafi will one day accept, as Skills said, you know, we'll be, well, it wasn't Skills, it was, who was the other guy that called in? Coach and Vallejo, that's who it was. Coach and Vallejo said, yeah, convince him. And I don't know if it's that easy either. I get why the Giants made that move for Rafi. Maybe the lesson learned is this is why you don't make trades for guys when you have guys coming up in the system.
Well, let me just ask you this. Do you think that we already know that he's been sort of anointed as the star of the future, if not, quote unquote, the face
Bryce,
of the Giants,
yeah.
That being Bryce Eldridge. Do you think this is sustainable for another 9 years?
No, especially because when Rafi arrived here, like, he was expected to be the star. Oh my God, he's here. Let's get him in really quickly. Ruderman!
Oh, we have time for the Ruderman replay.
Oh, we'll blow through the heart out to get our guy Ruderman on. Steven, glad you're awake, bud. How you doing this morning?
I'm all right. I've had to sleep in because I'm getting ready to head up north. How are you guys doing?
Doing good, man. I wish I could sleep in. That sounds really nice.
There's sleeping in, and then there's noon, Ruderman.
I'm about to head up on a long trip. What do you guys expect me to do?
Well, we expect the Ruderman replay, so we'll give you a couple of seconds to think of something here. But...
Well, no, I want to hear, Ruderman, I want to hear your call of the Casey Schmidt base hit in the ninth inning last night.
So, Ruderman, would you rather have us tell you what we want the Ruderman replay to be, or do we leave that up to your own devices?
I'll do it myself. I want to clarify something about what happened last night. Lance Barstow, the first base umpire, immediately made the call. Probably because he had a better angle of the catch, no catch. So I just want to clarify that. That's why there was confusion.
You don't think, what's his name? Willie Tarkenen, or what was his name again? I want to make sure I get the name right.
Willie Traynor.
You don't think that him at second base had the better angle than Barksdale at first? I mean, Traynor was looking right at it.
Well, the thing like that, when a guy's directly coming in like that, that can actually be a very hard call to make. As some people know, I umpire. I had a call 2 years ago at Jesuit during a freshman game in which a guy was coming in, a fly ball to right field. I was looking straight at the right fielder coming in, and I completely missed the call, and I was the only guy in the ballpark who had seen that angle. I mean, who had thought that he actually caught the ball. Thankfully, Jesuit was blowing out the other team. And I also want to say Willie Traynor was one of my instructors at the Wendelstedt Umpire School. Mm. They teach us about things about angles and things to that nature. I mean, they teach us two-man, but they, you know, when you go through umpire training. They're going to teach you about things like angles and you know, who is in a position to make certain calls.
All right.
That was remarkable.
I'll buy that.
You know, we've gone this long into the show, and that might be the most insightful thing that's come out of the.
Well, that's
the
why
last
I like having
rounds.
Him on. He can actually say what actually happens with the umpires, and then I'm going to yell about it anyway. So, that's what. So, do you have a call that you want to recreate for us here, Ruderman?
Any other takeaways from last night?
Oh, yeah. What's your thoughts on Flora?
I'm glad the Giants are drafting pitching. The Giants are, Buster has done a good job with the farm system, but the Giants desperately need pitching prospects, and I hope they get some pitching prospects 3 weeks from now at the deadline. All right, I'll give you Eldridge's first splash yet.
Love it.
Here's the pitch. There's a swing and a high drive, deep to right. This one is way back, and this one is into the water. Bryce Eldridge with the first of, I think, what we can safely assume will be many splash hits, and the Giants, well, I'm announcing a replay, so I don't remember what the score was at the time. It's 2-0 San Francisco.
2-0
Can you really quick, we got about 30 seconds. You can give us the Casey Schmidt line drive controversial outer safe play in center field last night with runners at first and second.
And what was Carey, just the guy in center? Here's the pitch, yep. Swinging a shot into center field. Carey coming in, he dives. And what's the call? I don't. Lance Barstow, the first base umpire, has his fist in the air signaling out. Everyone is confused. Nobody's going anywhere. They're going to throw the ball into second and step on the bag there. They're going to throw the ball at first and step on the bag there. Tony Vitello is going to come out. I have no clue what's going on other than that fact that Lance Barstow, the first base umpire, did signal out. He had a better angle of the play. Sometimes. And this is what they will teach you in the umpire world. You got to sacrifice distance for angle. Remember that, kids.
Mm. All right. I'm going to remember that. Thanks for calling in, Steven. Have a safe trip up north.
Ladies and gentlemen.
There we go. And that was Steven Ruderman. What a fun way to end the show, Dan. I'll see you. You're out next week,
yeah,
I believe, right?
Next week. Parts unknown. I'll see you in 2 weeks.
All right. I will see you in 2 weeks. I am going to get the hell out of town and go on vacation right on. For the next week. Risotto, Victor, great job behind the glass today. Shout out to you, Victor. I didn't give you a shout out on the show today, man. Crack the mic, say what's up to the people. Glad to have you on here.
Appreciate you, Sam. What's going on, everybody?
All right, there you go. I could have gone that earlier in the show and given him more of a runway, but you know what? I'll have you in with us next week, and I'll have you say more stuff. Then.
Hell of a job.
Good job, Victor. Hey, didn't even notice you on the board, and that's a good thing there. Noticed you a lot less than I did Willie Traynor, so that's what we like to see. Dan, thank you so much. Giants, they start in about an hour. Tyler Mahle against Kyle Freeland, our favorite guy there. See if he gets into any attitude issues today. And, of course, never forget, Dodgers suck.